Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And thank you very much, Bill Rock, and hello, everybody. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock, and hello, Mr. Mayor. Nice to see you.
Good morning, as always. John. Spring is coming, I promise. Well, yesterday, the snow.
You did good with the snow. It just disappeared all by itself.
I know that. The night before, we got out, went to the Knicks game, night before last, and as we're going in, it was hailing like you couldn't believe.
That's just what springtime's all about.
Yeah, I mean, every year we say it's different, but the truth of the matter is
it's always the same. All right, let's start with some numbers here. You have brought the city's number cruncher.
I have. The Census Bureau says that we don't have as many people as we think we have, and we've got lots of evidence why. And so I brought the person that would.
City's Planning Department's chief demographer. Hello there. I didn't even know. I didn't even know we had a demographer, but I guess we're good. I asked Joe.
Yeah, you have to, because you have to know numbers to make land use decisions. We just don't do this based on politics or picking it out of the air. For example, if you want to make sure that people build housing where there's mass transit, you've got to know where is mass transit. And
I asked Joe how involved the city was with the national census people in coordination. You said about 3 years worth.
We work for 3 years reviewing the list of addresses, which is the foundation for the whole census. That's where they mail the forms.
And does the city have its own number?
Yes. Well, we have a number that we work with the Census Bureau. We have a number that we've come up with, and the last number's in the range of 8.4 million.
And that's, 200,000 short of where the census is?
Yeah, approximately.
Where's the difference, or what do you think happened?
Well, what we think happened is that they took all our housing units, and in fact, we know there's been an increase net of about 165,000 housing units. The census showed 170,000 housing unit increase. So there's no disputing that. It's just they didn't put people in the housing units.
Oh, come on.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm sure they acted in good faith. It's a very difficult job the Census Bureau has. They're restricted by Congress. I'm sure they don't have enough money. And if you remember, we talked about this ad nauseum during the time we were doing it. Stacey Cumberbatch ran the city's effort to help and get out the people to return their forms and all of that sort of stuff. But it just doesn't make any sense that we have 170,000 housing units sitting vacant.
So what do you do?
Joe is going to contest, but there's very limited what you can do. The bottom line is the law says it is what they say it is by definition. And that influences how much money we get from Albany and Washington and how much representation we have in Albany and Washington. Joe, what can you do?
Well, this mayor said, we're fixed at 27 seats, and redistricting by law they have to utilize this file. What we can do is next year, as we do every year, the Census Bureau comes out with a new estimate of our population for July 1 of each year.
On a yearly basis.
Yeah. So July 1 of 11, we're going to have a new number. And then there's a process to challenge that number, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to take all our administrative data, we're going to put it all together, and we're going to pursue what's called a challenge.
And then there's a board or something that you go before? Or
it's a cooperative program.
There's one person that raises his hand and says yes or no?
The demographers here in New York and the demographers in Washington get together and we figure it out.
Because Mayor Bing from Detroit is doing the same thing because he feels he has some issues as well. And again, he's worried about – he's got real money problems.
Mayor Bing has a very tough job, right. And he's a good guy and working very hard. Keeping any of these cities, ours included, going is not easy. The good news, I suppose, out of the census is it does say we're growing, doing fine, and just we think we're growing even more. And you can see the problems that we have, not enough seats in schools. No matter how many we build, it's not enough. That says two things. One, the population's probably growing, but two, the schools are more attractive to people who want who live here and make decisions as to where to send their kids. Housing, there's just not a lot of empty housing, no matter what these numbers imply. There's something like 2.6 New Yorkers that live in each housing unit. And so if we have 170,000 units new, multiply that by 2.6, that's one of the ways Joe can estimate how many people we should have that they didn't seem to count. What we've got to keep doing is bringing down crime, improving the schools, cleaning the streets, doing all the things that make this an attractive city and attractive not for, just for people to come here, but we also need businesses to come here to create jobs, and we want to make sure that we get, you know, our share of big taxpayers, because big taxpayers are what let us, you know, something like 5,000 people pay 50% of New York City's income tax.
An incredible number.
5,000 people out of 8.2 or 8.4 million, no matter which number you use. And we've got to make sure that they want to come here and stay here.
Did the other numbers jive with your estimates? I'm talking about how the neighborhoods had changed, how the boroughs had changed.
Well, it's great you ask, because we looked at all those housing units that the Census Bureau said were vacant, and we looked at where they are. And they're in immigrant areas. They're not in areas that are subject to large-scale foreclosure or areas where we built a lot of new housing, you know, big developments. They're in immigrant neighborhoods. That's why, as the mayor said, it's probably an issue of getting into those units and getting people to respond.
Okay. Well, we'll see how you make out with your appeal, all right?
Yes, thank you.
Joe, good to see you. Joe Salvo, thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, why don't you sit tight? Why don't I take care of a little business here? We're coming right back. And again, don't forget, as most Fridays, 800-321-0710. If you have a question for the mayor, get in line early on, 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, we continue here, 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and you, before we finish, at 800-321-0710. Terrible story once again, ACS, this Marcello Brett Pierce, the 4-year-old that died. And for, I think for the first time, two ACS caseworkers indicted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I can't. There's an investigation, so you've got to be very careful what you say. We can't get involved. That's up to the District Attorney Hines. The one thing for sure is they were not overworked. You look to see how many cases a caseworker is assigned to, and in this case, they were roughly 9 apiece. The standard in the country is about, or average in the country is about 15. So, you know, we have enough caseworkers for the existing load. Now, what they did or didn't do, should have done or shouldn't have done, that's what's being investigated. It's a terrible tragedy no matter what. And, you know, you just pray these things don't happen. But I can tell you, I got people.
Are you confident that the management system is right?
You know, people keep asking that, and people around this country that know how difficult that kind of job is shake their head, because we probably do really have the best guy in the country. And I get, when I meet people, they say, how can people question this guy? You're so lucky. We'd love to have him, and, you know, please do us a favor, send him to us. And no, we're not going to do that. John Mattingly, he's got, like the judges who have to make these decisions, there's no right answer.
And you have to be right every time.
And you can't be right. It's just it's a function that society needs performed, where there is no right and wrong answers. You statistically make a judgment as to what's in the child's best interest, but that does not mean that in the end, retrospectively, it's going to turn out to be wrong. And judges have to approve every time John wants to take a child away from the parent or put it back with the parent. The judge has the same problem that ACS has. Are you helping or hurting? And sometimes doing nothing's the right thing, and sometimes doing something is the right thing. And if it turns out wrong, everybody wants to criticize you. But the one thing in this case we know for sure is that it was not that the caseworkers had too much to do.
All right, because in the past, well, there has been that, and I know that
there's been the allegation. I don't know even whether that was.
Well,
true.
You've adjusted. I know that you and I have talked long enough over the years, and I know that the caseworkers, the cases that workers have, has actually, I think, decreased over the years.
All right.
Yes. So that they can focus more on.
Yeah, I mean, although you're going to see a lot of angst the budget cuts that we have. I mean, we're waiting for the state budget.
Let's jump right into it.
But it's going to, you know, whether they restore some of the money or not, we have $600 million budget cut, and that assumes that you save $400, $450 million in the Department of Ed, which was their budget cut from last year, last November, but I didn't want to make any dramatic cuts during the school year. And so we've got to work that out. So, you know, the whole thing is, and we've already used all of the monies that we put aside during the good times.
So the rainy day fund is done.
Well, no, we have a little bit more for next year, but if you use any more, then we're not going to have enough for next year. This year, because the state cut $1 billion out of our education budget, and they're talking about restoring something, but, you know, they're talking about $50 or $60 million out of $1 billion. So essentially, it's $1 billion cut. Federal government didn't give us stimulus money, which we used for education. We put $2.1 billion of our reserves into education, and still we don't have enough. That still assumes that it is only enough to, assuming you downsize or find some other savings in the Department of Ed, and we're trying to do that, obviously. You always try to do all of those kind of different things and look at all the options and work with the city council. But $600 million, or whether it turns out to be $500 million, some number like that, in addition for all the other agencies, means that every one of these agencies is going to have to find ways to do more with less, and that's going to include, you know, every agency.
I'm assuming ACS took the, the 7% decrease that you've had across the board.
Everybody.
Already.
Yeah, sure. That was the last set of
that's
cuts.
What I'm saying, right?
Now we're coming back with another set of cuts, sort of on average, I think it's about 5%. 5.5%, something like that. And we're at the point now, you can cut, but you just can't do things as fast as you would like. You can't do as many things as you like, or do as much of any one good thing as you like. And unless the state restores, for example, some of the monies, there's a whole bunch of seniors' homes. It would be tragic if we had to cut those. But the city can't make up for the cuts that the federal government and the state government are making. Now, I understand from their point of view, they don't have much choice. That may be. But the bottom line is we send money to Washington. We send money to Albany. They give us back a small amount of it, and they're going to give us back even less of what's our money. I mean, that's the thing that people have got to understand. We are funding the rest of the country, the rest of the state. Now, we're not the only ones that send more than we get back, and nobody should feel I'm not singling out just us, but government collects money from everybody or everybody that pays taxes
like
and then redistributes
it. It's like those 5,000 New Yorkers that pay 50% of the taxes.
Right. I mean,
we're one of those five. The city is one of those 5,000.
That's exactly right. And what the government does is it takes it and it redistributes it based on, I hope, good intentions, needs. I have said that I think the budgeting process generally doesn't make a lot of sense in government because we start with how much money and then figure out what we can do rather than starting with what things we absolutely have to do to have a future and then figuring out how much money we need for it and then raising that money. Not anymore, but not any less. We're trying to do that in the city, do it in the top down rather than bottom up.
I think it's been very interesting to watch this process from all sorts of different angles and perspectives. But from a media standpoint and my standpoint, to watch the governor is now using radio and television to get his message across. You have chosen to do that as well. The unions and other constituencies are doing it. But the actual politicking is now moved from just the press conference to the wider
media.
Well,
the problem that government has, and I suppose in all fairness the unions as well, is that the press is an independent entity that writes what they think is interesting to the public because they're a business, and if the public doesn't find what they write interesting, you don't buy the paper or watch their station and buy from their advertisers or sign up for their blog or whatever it is. And so there's somebody deciding what information goes from the union to the public or the government to the public. And if there's stuff that the government or the union thinks is important, the only ways they can get it out is to go buy some of that media rather than get free media, if you will, by having the news organization cover it. Now, in all fairness, the news organizations, they do cover some, and the news organizations, I've always thought, are phenomenally democratic because they print or carry on the air what the public wants to hear. And, you know, Monica Lewinsky stayed on the cover for a long time until one day the media woke up and said, hey, nobody's paying attention, and so that then they go
on
to the next
thing.
Right, we move on. That's just, and that, nothing wrong with that system. I think you can make the case that it's better than somebody deciding. Let the public decide what they want. But, you know, that assumes the public knows what to ask for, and sometimes you don't think about things that would be interesting, but you do have to know, particularly when you're going to go vote the next time.
So, again, do you think that this trend that we've seen here over the last few months or maybe the last year or so, do you think it will only get larger?
I don't know.
It's
hard to – there's a point at which nobody can afford to keep doing it, or the public just tunes out and it's no longer effective. But, you know, I mean, for example, we've – got to get out the message that some of the tough things we're doing now are in the interest of the city long term. Getting the control of the budget, reducing our expenses, looking at programs that we've been doing for a long time but aren't working anymore. And there's no reason why we should keep doing it. There are some people who say, oh, I don't want to cut this. Well, you got to explain why you're doing it.
Exactly. So, all right, let me take a break right here once again. Remind everybody, we've got a couple of open lines still, 800-321-0710, and it's 831. Joe Bartlett's got news.
Tell John what you think. News Talk Radio, 710 WOR, 800-321-0710.
22 before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you. We got one line open, 800-321-0710. We also have some tweets that have come into the mayor.
You
want to
do a tweet or so?
You got a tweet? Go ahead, do a tweet.
Somebody from New York City named Winston asks, do you have a plan on having a bridge named after you, after you after you leave office? No. I think of all the mayors, and I think mayors Dinkins and Giuliani would agree with me. Maybe not. Who knows? It is Ed Koch served for 12 years, dedicated his life to the city. He still is doing that, trying to help the city and the state. And it's a nice thing to do. And the city council overwhelmingly passed a bill. It's still going to, the name of the song is still Queensborough Bridge and
59th Street Bridge. He told me, I talked to Mayor Koch this week. He told me that Paul Simon assured him that he would rewrite the song.
Paul Simon's a really good guy. You know, when Koch took office, the bridge was falling apart. And he really put an awful lot of city money into the bridge. It was its first major rehabilitation, I think, in decades. Something.
When will you sign this bill? Well,
sometime next week. They schedule signing ceremonies. Okay. And we will, the renaming the signs will be paid for by private donations, so there's no expense here for the city. But, you know, the publicity is good for around the country. People are talking about New York. And if you think... all of these, back before Koch, the city turned over all its bridges to the state, at least the East River bridges,
really?
To manage them and to repair them. They didn't do a lot, and then Koch regained control of the bridges and created the Bureau of Bridges within the Department of Transportation, funded it, and we've redone virtually all the East River bridges because of Ed Koch. So he really has made a big difference not just in the city, but, you know, you can argue specifically for bridges. And the number of bridges in poor condition in 86 was something like 74, and today, zero.
When I was talking with the mayor, I said to him, I said, is it true that you have pledged in your estate, in your will, that you will pay, if and when they ever toll the 59th Street or the Ed Koch Queensborough Bridge, you will pay the tolls for all of those that want to come come from
Queens. He'll come back to do it.
He said, no, I haven't gone quite that far just yet. I'm generous, and I love the people of New York, but I'm not sure I do.
And the people of New York love Ed Koch.
Absolutely. So, story this morning, we know about the no-fly zone over Libya, a no-drive zone in Central Park and Prospect Park.
You know, it's an idea that comes up every couple of years. We've done studies. If you did not allow cars in the park during rush hour, and for example, these parks don't totally, but generally they don't allow cars other than at rush hour. If you didn't do that, the rest of the city streets would be overloaded. And it would create an awful lot of traffic jams.
So probably not? I mean,
I think it's unlikely to do it. We already don't allow cars in off hours. And in off hours, that's when most people run or bicycle or walk in the parks anyways. I know there's some people that don't ever want cars in any place. But the bottom line is they are the roads in the parks are important parts of our ability to move traffic, and so you can't just do it in a vacuum. Always listen, you know.
Yeah. We always talk about money and budgets. I saw a small piece here that there's $302 million in federal money for schools that hinges on teacher evaluation. Do you know?
You know, we're working with the UFT, and in all fairness to the UFT, and I don't agree with them on a lot of things. But Michael Mulgrew, the leader of the UFT, and his staff, along with the city, and Dennis Walcott, and first Klein, and now would be Kathy Black, they negotiated some ways to get rid of those rubber rooms. Doesn't solve all our problems. In that case, what we really did was speed up the adjudication process. Now, that didn't change the ways you get evaluated, I don't think, really, but it did speed it up. So within, I think it's like 3 months, you get your day in court, win or lose. If you win, you go back to the classroom. If you lose, you're out. And that saves a lot of money. And
is this race to the top money that we're talking about?
Yeah, there's lots of different programs that you can apply for. But the big thing, if you put this in context, it's great. It'd be great to have that $300 million. But the federal government did cut $850 million in stimulus funds that we were using in education. And the state budget, unless it's changed by the proposed state budget,
you're still up the creek.
Cuts $1 billion. So, you know, that's where you really got to sit there and say, what are we doing? We invest our money in the future, but education is the real thing in the future that you should be investing in, and we don't put enough money in.
And I see.
Although we do spend twice the amount that many, many other big cities do per capita. Now, some of that's because we have lots of special ed kids and lots of English language learners, and it costs more in a big city to run the school system, buying fuel and waste removal and, you know, all the things that you do. So I'm not sure that more money is the be-all and end-all, but nationwide we certainly aren't investing enough in the future. And even in New York City, there are programs you'd like to have, more science and math and arts and, you know, a lot of things you could do.
School construction, I see the budget's been
whacked. School construction, whacked isn't quite the right word. Cut back some, but we just... You know, the debt service is something that you got to pay. Constructing isn't free. People say, oh, let's just build it. Well, some things you have to go build, some things you want to go build, but you can't afford everything.
Did you see the comments that Congressman Weiner made about possibly New York City getting a waiver from the Obama health care?
I saw there was an op-ed piece I saw that was critical of what he said. I didn't read it carefully. You know, Anthony Weiner is a smart guy has some ideas. Whether this makes any sense or not, I don't know. If there is a provision to waiver out you think it's a bad thing, you should use the waiver. We could waiver out, for example, requiring fingerprinting to get things like food stamps. We think that reduced dramatically and was started by Rudy, incidentally, reduced dramatically the number of people who scam the system and come back more than once when they're only entitled to once. There is the argument that, well, now you've got the crime down to zero, why do it? Well, because it would go right back. So you shouldn't do that. But I think the criticism of it wasn't so much in the way I glanced through the op-ed piece, wasn't so much criticism of Anthony Weiner. It was, if he thinks we should waiver out, why did he vote for the bill? Is it the right thing for the country? And that's not an Anthony Weiner issue. That's a countrywide issue. He's part of it.
Yeah. No, and it was just interesting. But
I didn't think it was fair to just take a shot at him.
No, it wasn't. In fact, I did yesterday and corrected myself on exactly that point earlier this morning, because it wasn't exactly the way it had been presented. Let's see here.
Well, parking tickets, you can now...
Oh, that's right.
Thank you. You can...
High-tech it.
High-tech it and contest them online. I think something like 50% of the people that contest win, so it's not meaningless. The real problem is you got to go down in person during the week, and a lot of people, particularly small business owners, can't do that. That's their livelihood. Or people don't get paid when they take the time off. And so this lets you do that. It won't solve all the problems, and there are some you still have to show up. But it shows you the kind of things you can do. It's interesting. Steve Goldsmith, our new deputy mayor from the Kennedy School of Government in Cambridge, Mass., and before that, Indianapolis, where he was mayor, he's tried to look at each of these things to keep going. And this is part of that whole process that he supervises to make government more efficient. One of the things I love, there's a requirement for lots of things that you can file electronically, but you have to sign in person.
Which is
mind-boggling. Yeah. You know what he did? He said, show me the law. Nobody could find the law. It was one of these things that
somebody said.
Sure. You know, three decades ago. And it just has always been done that way. And it shows a new face coming in, asking the right questions, saying, you know, why? Or what? Or show it. Show me. He didn't come from the show me state, but...
You lead to one of my questions on my notepad here is in that he has also suggested a change in direction about consultants and having city workers do...
There's the management of the consulting contracts. You know, people say, oh, you're spending too much money on outsiders. If you didn't do that one contract outside, you'd have to have those people permanently on your staff. So, no, that's not... And the consultants, they say, oh, they charge a lot more. Well, because that's the business. They don't work all the time, so they have to get paid more. And sometimes they have expertise you don't have in-house. Now, not everything should be done outhouse, you know, outside of the house. I've always thought, for example, the major services should always stay in the city. You could farm out, one of the things he's looking at, the automobile fleet we have. Doesn't matter who owns it, doesn't matter who maintains it, you get the best deal you can. The people that those cars are for example, police officers, they should be city employees, firefighters, you know, sanitation. Sanitation is actually interesting because half of the solid waste in our city is done privately, all the commercial, and half is done by our sanitation department. And I looked one time, 4 or 5 years ago, try to do a calculation and see whether or not the city was, as everybody says, oh, the city's so less efficient. You got to adjust a little bit because the sanitation department has to clean the streets and the waste baskets and that sort of thing. But it looked to be about the same. That, you know, the Department of Sanitation is pretty efficient. They use a lot of technology, and Daugherty's done a good job, as all the people.
All right, let me take a break, but pick some. You don't have to use that just yet, but pick some of the calls here,
okay.
And we'll talk to some of the folks on the phone in just a second. It's 11 before 9 o'clock. We'll be right back.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, Bill Rock, let us include the listeners this time around. Your turn with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And Ellen, you're going to be up first. Good morning, Ellen.
Hi, good morning. Mr. Mayor, my friend is a taxi driver, and last week he picked up a fireman. It was a $9 fare. And at the end of the ride, the fireman refused to pay. He just says, I don't have to. So I'm trying to this is not an unspoken rule, is it?
It is certainly not. The cab driver has a right to get paid, and city employees shouldn't be taking free things from anybody just because there's a conflict. And I don't know whether the cab driver got the name of the firefighter. If he did, he should Call 311 and they'll tell them where to lodge a complaint. The Taxi and Limousine Commission, he can call. But no, everybody has to pay. I pay, you pay, the firefighter should pay.
All right, Ellen, thank you very much. Let's see here. John, you've got the mayor. What's your question?
Yeah, hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
I'd like to know if you would consider raising residential property taxes, being that the property taxes in the city are about five times lower than the surrounding counties, Nassau, Suffolk, Westchester, Rockland. And additionally, what happened to all this lottery money that's supposed to go to education? Millions of dollars are raised each week, and yet you don't hear anything going to education.
Well, I don't know how successful lotteries are these days because there is competition for lotteries and more of these casinos and racinos kind of thing. But that's always been, they always say, yeah, it'll go for education, and then it does go for education, but then they cut the other funds, so it's all fungible. That's just a scam. That's always said. I suppose it does bring more revenue in total, and so a little more goes to education. Generally, the monies go to the state. In terms of property taxes, John, I don't know if the number's right, a fifth, but the property taxes in New York City are lower than they are in other counties in the state, but we have a sales tax and we have an income tax. We share with the other counties the state tax and federal tax. So the tax burden in New York City is much higher than it is most other places. Now, I would argue you get a lot for that, but the fact that the property tax is low is misleading. The total tax burden is higher than we'd like to have it, and we're always trying to find ways to reduce our expenses. Unfortunately, we've cut about $5 billion in recurring costs, but our pension costs have gone up by $6, $7 billion, some number like that.
Yeah, that's pretty much unsustainable.
It is unsustainable, and, you know, we're trying to do something about it. The city's tax pension costs cannot continue, and the states can't. And when the state fixes the problem, they're going to have to fix it for cities as well. They can't just do it for the state.
You've got a tweet in front of you. You wanted to answer.
Sure. It's interesting. Somebody tweets and says, why can't the subways go all the way to the city airports? It would save so much in terms of congestion and everything else. That's a good question. The first answer is, in the case of LaGuardia, the subway was built 10 or 20 years before the airport. And once you build a subway, construction takes place around it, so it's really hard to put an airport close to an existing line or extend the line. You can get to LaGuardia, and you can get to JFK. JFK, there is this air train, so you can take the subway
or the
Long Island Railroad, and then right. You get on the air train. It does take a long time, in all fairness, but, you know, driving to JFK, especially in traffic, takes a long time. So it's not perfect, but it is better. We do not have these very fast train to the planes that you see in Chicago, for example. I've always been envious in Chicago. You're driving down a road, or in Washington, D.C.
They go right down the center of the road, the train.
Absolutely. You come and drive in from Dulles Airport in Washington and in traffic at rush hour, and the train goes zipping by. Why don't I take the train? You should.
See, I've maintained for probably 25 or 30 years why we don't use the air rights. We used to have L's in New York with trains, elevated trains. Why not use monorails, elevated monorails, which take less kind of, gross space, and run them right down the right-of-ways?
Well, part of it is it costs money to build anything. And there's always competing things. Some neighbors don't want more construction that they would see. But long term, like lots of other things, we have a big problem. Our airports cannot handle the traffic, and you can't get there.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Well, we're out of time, and we'll have to pick it up next week on Friday. Thank you very much. Have yourself a good
Looking
week.
Forward to it.
Oh, Inner Circle. You going to tell us what you're going to do?
I cannot tell you, John. I'm sorry.
I have to read
it. But I'll tell you next week what we did do.
Thank you very much. I always appreciate it. We've still got lots to do here, an hour's worth.